This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yeah, that's what we do. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, classes in session. And anybody watching the YouTube kind of saw Jess and Tim kind of put their hands up when they announced Johnny Lupinacci. And well, Jess, we have to announce it's another day now, too, that he's, you know, his science denialism isn't working out so well.
No, it's not. He has the flu.
He has the flu. The real deal.
The real deal flu.
He thought that if he said he didn't have it, that he would end up not really having it.
Yeah, it turns out that, you know, science does actually have some answers for us occasionally.
Yeah, taking a flu test and finding out it's positive and then trying to deny that positive test didn't work out so well. So, Johnny Lupinacci, we hope you get well. Our friend, we will miss you. Jess, how you doing?
You know, I'm doing all right. The past couple weeks have been incredibly chaotic and very stressful covering all of the national news. However, to be here now with you and our fantastic guest, this is all wonderful.
Yeah, talk about fantastic guest. We are so happy to have her back. We're not going to reveal her whereabouts because it's super special to get her. Yeah. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, you know her. She's here visiting, talking a little bit about, you know, we're going to talk about the science of reading and a piece in the Boston Globe. But Nancy, we first got to ask, what do you make of what's happening here in the States as you get to observe from a safe space and kind of think about this? What do you make of the world we're existing in right now?
Well, first of all, hi, I'm really happy to see you. It's so nice to talk to people who are reasonable thinkers and talkers in such a dark time. So hi, and hi, Johnny. I hope maybe you're listening, but we miss you.
Yeah, we do.
As far as I can tell, there is an attempted coup going on in the United States. And it's interesting when we look at history, because there have been coups many times through history. The United States has been a part of quite a few of them. And they've usually involved military violence. But we're seeing here an attempted coup, I think, just using money and data, basically, to control what happens. And it's happening very fast. And in the first couple, you know, just these first few weeks of the new administration, I think it's taken many people by surprise, and it's been very difficult for them to get a grip on organizing and responding quickly. Although, with hindsight, everyone should have known it, because they said they were doing it and they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part, right? Is that this isn't like, whoa, where did this come from?
Right.
I mean, it was laid out, but, you know, Nance, the way you talked about it, though, too, a coup. Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway, podcast Pivot, they've been talking about this. And they really, last week went into pointing out what you just said and saying this is a legitimate coup.
Yeah.
And pointed out very much the business, the data, the undermining of all of the structures that were in place, potentially even now saying that, well, it doesn't matter what the law says. We've been elected by a majority. We're going to go forward. And I just saw on social media, they got blasted as how dare they declare this president, who was elected by so many people, that he would ever engage in a coup. And, you know, and this is the crazy world. And I think people, the way you pointed that out, too, we imagine that word coup was some form of like physical military violence.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing here, is that maybe what makes it potentially hard for people to say it's a coup?
I think that there are a lot of reasons why people wouldn't want to accept something that sounds that extreme. And they've been very good at this for decades, which is very quietly building the structures to support what's happening right now and making it happen so fast. Because this has been, you know, books I've mentioned to before, like How Democracies Die, Democracy in Chains. These books help us understand what's been going on for decades, but kind of behind the scenes.
Right.
And with dark money and with this, and with Citizens United, you know, all the pieces are kind of in place. I don't know how many Americans see these issues or see how they're interconnected and how they've paved the way for what's happening right now and how serious it is. And we're in a situation now where the resistance from the that should be in place just by our Constitution are not really operating.
Right.
Because we have, you know, a Congress that's unfortunately for a long time been dysfunctional. And then, you know, the judicial branch, because of Trump's earlier appointments and all the unfair things that happened to Obama, et cetera, we have a Supreme Court that's favorable towards what he does. So it's not the only hope I have at the moment is that the federal judges will stop some of these unconstitutional and lawless actions by Trump. But I don't know if that what I'm worried about is even if they try, I think what we have to see is if I don't like to say his name, I so dislike the man, but I don't know what you call him. Anyway, him.
We call him TFG.
Okay. And what that is?
Well, we'll talk to you when the show's over and let you know what that means.
That blanking guy.
So TFG is what we're going with. And what we have to see is will he go against the judges? If he just ignores what they say, then we're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the fear that got stoked really, you know, big time this weekend. I don't know if you saw the news, but Vice President Vance put out a tweet on X or whatever you want to call it now that kind of pushed the, you know, that premise that, you know, how dare this judge get himself involved in an executive decision and, you know, kind of setting the stage for the potential of saying, you know, will they abide by these judges' rulings? We can only hope that some type of common sense comes across. Boy, we could talk about this for so long, Nance, but, you know, let's shift gears and move along. You and colleague Julie Hackett had a beautiful piece published in the Boston Globe last week. The fallacy of settled science in literacy. And Busted Pencils listeners all already know that when we're talking to Dr. Nancy Carlson Page and we have something to talk about the science of reading, she's going to give us a sense of the reality, the history, and where this comes from. But Nancy, the piece, I mean, what, just to remind, what prompted you and Julie to put this piece together and have it published in the Boston Globe?
Right. We've been meeting with other literacy educators since last summer, concerned about the science of reading, and we can go into why and all that is. But then not that long ago, maybe a month or so, some parents in Massachusetts initiated a class action suit against the authors of two curricula, quite well known, Irene Fountas, Gesu Pinnell, and I can't remember the other one right
Lucy.
Now.
Lucy Calkins.
And and against the publisher, Heinemann Publishers. So a question we should ask ourselves is, are people, by the way, I know some of these people, they are such well-meaning, dedicated, caring theoreticians and researchers who developed curriculum out of theory and out of science to the best of their ability. Okay, so if you've got some classrooms where some kids, who many of them have some learning issues, aren't learning to read, do we blame the curriculum developer of the curriculum that teachers are using? That's a pretty deep question. in other words, are they responsible? When we look at the number of factors that influence children's success in school, as we were discussing before, primarily zip code, primarily the family income issues are affecting school achievement more than anything else. And I think legislators don't want to look at it, look at that. And so they find a simple solution like the science of reading, which isn't scientific. We'll discuss that more in order to alleviate themselves, have an easy answer to a complex problem and not deal with the underlying issues that are causing school achievement inequality.
Right. I mean, and pointing that out, too, is to really say, you know, if we're talking about research, research has been pretty conclusive about academic achievement and standardized test scores that the biggest predictor of if you want to know those test scores. In fact, we have we've had Chris Tenken on a few times who says, just show me a couple socioeconomic factors and I will predict test scores. And he's done it time and time and time again.
Yeah.
But as you said, for some reason, that is a problem that politicians don't want to address. They would rather see it through curriculum. And so, now we have the science of reading, and this lawsuit by the parents is essentially saying everyone should have known that we shouldn't have been using balanced literacy, Lucy Calkins and her curriculum. We should have been using science of reading. And because they used the wrong theoreticians, the wrong curriculum, our kids now can't read. And so we're suing. Does that kind of make the sense of what, quick summary?
Yeah, that's correct. And they're hoping for success in Massachusetts. This is the first state they've done it. And then they'll have copycat suits. It's a class action suit.
Okay.
So they want other families in other states to join in. So it's very scary and threatening to these poor academic people who dedicated their lives to kids, success in reading and writing, that they're bearing the burden of this threat.
And I mean, let's go right to it, though, too. They're calling it the issue of this word to science, right? We're really saying research, what does research show us? The science of reading co-opts that term. When the argument, though, too, that says they should have used the science of reading, and somebody says, well, research shows. Nancy, how do you point out the complexity of research, especially for literacy acquisition?
There's a very good book called Fact Finding, the Science of Reading. I recommend it by Pearson and Tierney, that will explain in great detail all of the assumptions and claims by science of reading and sort of deconstruct them and use a lot of research. So we can't go into it in depth here.
Right.
But I can say to you, there is no settled science. So saying, in other words, what research shows us is that some programs have lesser and greater success depending on the other variables in the situation, such as the children, the income level of their parents, the teacher, the instructional methods used by the teacher, many other factors in the classroom that affect the success of a reading program. So the claim that it's settled is just false. There isn't any science that shows us that one program is better than another in literacy.
Yeah. So for any, for our listener out there thinking about that, apply it somewhere in a way that you can think about, your past or your kids or your grandkids. And I always do that too. My daughter, guess what? She didn't really need any instruction in phonics, hardcore instruction. She learned to read by us spending a lot of time with her, lots of books in our house. And those are issues that would actually predict better, quote, reading. And I've told this story before her first grade teacher was very alarmed at one point with Lacey because her Dibbles score was really, kind of slow and literally slow because her fluency of nonsense words was not fast enough. And
that's a riot.
Yeah, you know, and not that the teacher was coming from a bad place, because the teacher was really concerned, because that was the kind of bar the teacher was being held against, was would Lacey's, you know, fluency of nonsense word scores be held against her? Yeah. You know, but we went in and just said, you know, Mrs. First Grade Teacher, she's already reading.
Yeah.
And that's not a brilliance of my daughter, but that points out what you said, Nancy. In first grade, Lacey's class of 23 kids, she was a reader. There were kids who were just starting to come together and recognize letters. And then across that, so you've got first graders reading and some first graders who need instruction on letter recognition.
Well, that's a key point that we're trying to make, is that one size does not fit all. It's like my older son, Kylie, read my op-ed and he goes, yeah, one size doesn't fit all. It doesn't even work with ponchos. What are they trying to do here? And if any, it seems to me a parent or teacher who's at all observant can see that there's quite a variation in how children learn to read. And in fact, it's a beautiful mystery because no one knows how exactly it happens. But some children do need some direct instruction in phonics, but some don't. My younger son, Matt, sailed into reading, never had phonics, just absolutely got, you know, predictable books and could read, just went over and over the Berenstain Bear book about 100 times until he could read. So it depends. The teacher has to have a big toolbox, lots of different things to draw upon, and a lot of ability to observe children, understand them developmentally, and know when to apply certain methods and when to let them go in relation to any specific kids. That's an art. And now that teachers are considered dumb and blamed and have to follow a predetermined script, it's going downhill.
Man, we are going so quickly through the interview here, but you just said something though really powerful too, that big toolbox and the reality and understanding, okay, outside of this suit, but across the country in states and state like mine, Ohio, the legislative legal mandate of teachers and teacher education programs that is saying you can't even give future teachers a toolbox of any size with lots of things. You can only provide them this minuscule little toolbox of the science of reading. And you just made me think of that, Nancy, going like, we're literally legislating that teachers have less tools when they go
It's important to understand that the science of reading isn't about science. It's a movement to affect curriculum, instruction, and teacher education. And it's aligned with a lot of conservative education forces. It gets money from them. Some of them are funding the court case. It's aligned with the culture wars because it's highly scripted, controlled and sequenced, so teachers don't have any room to bring in storybooks. Storybooks have been banned from a lot of classrooms. So books that reflect kids' differences aren't allowed. So Moms for Liberty loves Science of Reading. So we have to understand this is a political movement. This isn't an education movement. It's only that on the surface. Right. Underneath, it's actually, you know, one of the biggest curricula used is E.D. Hirsch's
Core Knowledge.
Core Knowledge Language Arts. It's been adopted and mandated in more than half the states that use Science of Reading. And you know what that, and that's coming from E.D. Hirsch, who wrote Cultural Literacy or whatever that book was in the 80s. I think that's it, Cultural Literacy.
Yeah.
That the standards movement even grew from. So we're talking about a lot of conservative forces because the science of reading is top down. Mm-hmm. It's whole class. It's sequenced and controlled, and there's no room for the teacher to talk about any other topics that people don't want kids to hear about.
Boy, I wonder then if Matt's Berenstain Bears was be showing up on the Moms of Liberty banned books list right now.
It could be.
I just, you know, I mean, but even that is to say, you know, the enjoyment, the reading, and Nancy, I'm so glad you pointed this out, because, you know, we can get really hung up on getting into the emotional, I really need my child to read, because that's a big deal. And we know literacy is an incredibly important thing for everybody to achieve. And so we get wrapped up in the, so which curriculum helps my kid read better? And it's like, well, when do you have a moment to peel down and really understand that? Yeah, I mean, you know, cultural literacy was in the late 80s. This push to really say, which sounds like we're just really concerned about kids reading. The reality is that we're not concerned about their literacy levels so much as we're concerned about what they read and the control of curriculum, not the control of the ability to learn to read, the control of the ability of what they're going to read and how those things really affect, as you said, the culture wars.
Yeah, you know, Hirsch really believes that. This is incredible to me and very problematic, but he apparently believes that the achievement gap and the issues of inequality in education would be solved if everybody had the same facts, the same core curriculum. And that really the inequities are caused by progressive teachers who let all these other things leak into the curriculum. But I must say, there are parallels between what's happening in science of reading and what's happening in the nation that we first talked about. These things are running parallel, because the science of reading is based on a lot of mythology. It's not factual. That's another reason we wrote the op-ed. We got so tired of the lies and the misinformation and the false information. We felt we had to say something about it, but we've already been challenged about that, but I can't go into it right now. But I'm stunned because there's so much false information everywhere now. Mm. I actually feel, I mean, people don't know whom to believe or what to believe, because there's so many lies out there and they're accepted as truth. I mean, right. DFG is always lying and people accept it. So, you know, we're trying to come out with some facts.
Yeah.
You know, and it's unheard of. That's why we're getting attacked, because we're actually telling the truth.
How dare you use facts
How
to go
radical.
After
the, my the goodness. Radical.
My goodness. Taking on science with facts. Who would have ever thought it would be there? Oh, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, we really appreciate you busting pencils with us on this Classes in Session. Anything else, though, that, you know, the listener needs to be aware of that you would want to make sure that we covered for today?
Well, let's see. I did want to make sure that people try to dig in a little bit to see the alignment of the science of reading movement with a whole belief system that's conservative in education. It's an anti-teacher movement. It's an anti-progressive education movement. It aligns with a lot of conservative forces in education, and is very anti-public education.
And look, it's very anti-science.
Yeah, that's the first thing. There is no science behind this. And I would love to have more time to explain that sometime, but I can just say the person who's the neuroscientist whose work they mostly depended on for the podcast Sold a Story, really, when you read what he says, is not promoting a one-size-fits-all phonics-based curriculum at all. And he's saying it's very difficult, and everybody knows this, to align an instructional program with what little science we have about the brain. That connection isn't something we've been able to make yet.
Right.
So they made huge leaps in the wrong direction. But all these legislators in 40 states got so excited about having a one-size-fits-all simple solution to reading problems for a crisis that's not even real, it's manufactured, that they all started mandating these curricula, which has really demoralized teachers and made them even increasingly want to leave the field and fewer wanting to enter, because who wants to have people policing you when you're teaching something you don't even want to teach?
Well, you know, one little thing too, just a comment, our friend Paul Thomas, we love him. He pointed, you know, so you point out, you have 40 states fully involved, you know, kind of pushing the science of reading. It's been going now, you know, Paul claims 10 years in some states, but maybe, you know, full force in 5 years. But the NAEP scores were released last week, and those darn NAEP scores show that kids lost ground.
Yeah.
And Paul was, you know, wondering out loud in his Radical Scholarship blog why science of reading isn't to blame for the decline in reading scores.
Yeah, I'm with him 100%. I felt the same way as soon as I saw those scores. And, you know, if we were thinking clearly, we would say, that must mean that this mandated top-down scripted approach to reading isn't the solution. And we start opening up the conversation again, which, again, we were trying to do in this op-ed. But I think the forces, I hope I'm getting through with that, are so solid and coordinated that it's going to take a lot, just like on the national scene, it's going to take a lot to undo it, because it's a real easy way out.
Right. Well, yeah. And say Paul's number one point out, too, is that, you know, the science of reading people, when confronted with the fact that the NAEP scores dropped, quickly pointed out that, you know, out of school factors such as COVID is probably more to actually contributing to those declines. We got so much more. We love having Dr. Nancy Carlson Page on the show. Dr. Nancy, thanks for busting pencils.
I love talking with you, because it's nice to talk to someone who can actually think about things and have a conversation without an argument, but just exploring the ideas. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Tim.
She must be talking about Jess, though, because that.
And thanks, Jess, both of you.
Thank you. And now for your moment of zen. If history is to be creative, to anticipate a possible future without denying the past, it should, I believe, emphasize new possibilities by disclosing those hidden episodes of the past when, even if in brief flashes, people showed their ability to resist, to join together, and occasionally to win. Thanks, everybody, for busting pencils with us on this Classes in Session. Make sure that you hang out on Friday. Yeah, first down, face-offs and free throws. Saturday, one full hour homeroom. And everybody, keep busting pencils.